The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformation. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to another episode of Life Transformation Radio. I'm your host, Master Resilience Implementer, TEDx speaker, business positioning strategist, and international best-selling author, Sean Douglas. This show is currently heard in over 74 countries. So whether it's your first time joining us or you've been listening to us for some time, I want to thank you to those who are listening from around the world. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformation. Here, we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing. We highlight that transformational moment that changed our lives and how we use it to then transform others and elevate their lives as well. You can listen to us live right here on the Blog Talk Radio Network Tuesday through Friday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Join our Facebook group, Life Transformation Radio Community, and never miss an episode by subscribing wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. Life Transformation Radio can be heard on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spreaker, Spotify, TuneIn, Player FM, Radio Public, Overcast, CastBox, the Himalaya app, the Google Play Music app, and now available on Pandora. Wherever you listen to podcasts, please subscribe. And if the app allows you, leave a rating and review. Let us know how we're doing. On the show, my guests are entrepreneurs, speakers, business owners, coaches, podcasters, authors, amazing human beings that are impacting the world around them. And my guest today has done exactly that. If you have any questions for any of the guests that I bring on the show during our live broadcast, call us up and ask a question, 657-383-1109. Again, the number is 657-383-1109. And with that, I welcome my guest, Ryan Matthews. I welcome the listening audience to episode number 300. So welcome to Life Transformation Radio.
Hey, Sean. Happy to be here on episode 300. Let's get it on, man.
Episode 300. You know what's crazy? I look at the way life falls into place. And it's Wednesday, November 6th. And yesterday I had a guest that had to cancel. So I was like, oh, well, he's not going to be 300. Last Friday, somebody canceled. Last Thursday, somebody canceled. So I've literally been sitting on episode 299 for almost a week. And it went through like three, four people before it got to you. So you, my friend, are episode 300.
I feel like a lucky one, and I'm the chosen one. I'm happy to be here, man, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what we dive into for your audience.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely, man. So so we met, what, New Media Summit, San Diego, September. It was an amazing event. I had a lot of fun, man, meeting everybody and especially meeting you.
Absolutely, yeah. I was really impressed with, you know, seeing you there and learning about the incredible work that you're doing. And I've definitely been following you on social and really just enjoying all the value that you're bringing to people. You're just dropping knowledge bombs left and right pretty much every day. And that's when I knew that we had to collaborate, man. We had to connect. And there was just so much alignment.
Yeah, I love it, man. And because it's November and you are an Army veteran, so happy Veterans Day to you, my friend.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that. And I believe you're still in the service. Is that right?
Yes. Yep. Two more years to go.
Thanks for still serving, man.
Thank you, man. So the title of this episode is Overcoming PTSD with Dog Training Techniques with TEDx speaker Ryan Matthews. He is an inspirational speaker, author, and decorated veteran who trained elite Army canines and then became a civilian dog trainer using his proven formula to train over 3,000 dogs. Ryan is passionate about bridging the gap of communication between dogs and their owners. He does this with World of Dog Training and Peace of Mind CBD, a natural health option for dogs with pain, illnesses, and behavioral issues. Despite Ryan's overwhelming success building a dog training empire, he felt like a failure. As a self-professed workaholic, Ryan put all his energy and focus into his work rather than into himself. After years of battling childhood trauma and combat PTSD, the result was multiple life-threatening diagnoses and 5 near-death experiences. Through self-discovery, Ryan has transformed his life and has made it his mission to share his gifts and talents to positively transform the lives of others. Author of The Canine Connection and The Art of Dog Training, Ryan is an inspirational speaker who talks about PTSD and transformation through his TEDx talks, Overcoming PTSD with Dog Training Techniques, and his second one, Life Lessons Dogs Teach Humans. Ryan developed an e-learning platform with over 100 online lessons for dog owners to continue their learning on demand 24/7. He has an upcoming book on his story of 5 near-death experiences and the transformation after a life filled with trauma. You can go to his Facebook and LinkedIn links are right there in the show notes. Go to worldofdogtraining.com. Go to I Am Ryan Matthews with 2 T's, IamRyanMatthews.com, and check out peaceofmindhemp.com. Connect with Ryan. Let him know that you heard him here on Life Transformation Radio. Right after reading that, I got to know, man, what is your why? Why do you do what you do?
I love that question. And my truth is I'm 38 years old and that I have not known my why for nearly my entire life. And so I appreciate that question because I feel like it's a really important one for us all to identify. And so my why is essentially giving back to dogs that have taught me so much. And it comes by way of this. You know, I was a military working dog handler in the Army and I volunteered to go to the war. Yep. And I feel like a military working dog saved my life. It kept me safe. And I feel like I owe dogs a thanks just for that. The other piece is that after the war, I came home absolutely numb and shut off from the world emotionally and mentally and physically as well. Now, dogs were the first being that I could care for. And eventually I could grow to love dogs. And I wasn't able to feel or love people, but it was dogs first that opened my heart back up. And so ultimately, dogs taught me how to love again. And so because of my working dog keeping me safe, and because of dogs showing me how to love and feel again, I really feel as though I'm indebted to them. I feel that I pretty much owe them my life, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing in the world of dog training and Peace of Mind Hemp is essentially giving back to improve the quality of life of dogs because they've done so much for me.
Amazing. I had 2 dogs. One abruptly, I don't know, she got sick or I don't know what happened. We still kind of, I think her stomach got twisted somehow, but she had passed away right before New Media Summit. It was like devastating.
Had
a dog for like 10 years. And we have another one who's a Belgian Malinois. So, I feel you, man. I don't even know. Like, I was devastated when my other dog had passed away. Just I came home, you know, I came home from work. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, she is on the floor. So, it's crazy because you go to certain hospitals and they allow like puppies and young dogs to like come into the hospital and you see the patients just come to life and filled with joy. That's why it's man's best friend. That's why, you know, cats only poop in a box and dogs are like out, you know, helping people survive.
No doubt. You know, that's so true. What you're talking about is a therapy dog, which is different than a service dog. And, you know, I experienced the power of therapy dogs in my own life, in that I was involved in a really bad ATV accident that nearly killed an ex-girlfriend and I. And she was in a really bad way. And unfortunately, she was in the hospital for weeks. And she wasn't able to talk and, you know, borderline, maybe not make it. And in short, when she finally started to feel better and was able to talk, she said that the number one best thing that the hospital or we had done for her was me arranging for the therapy dog to go and visit her. She said that that was like soul food, soul medicine for her.
Wow.
And that was the contributor to her kind of really coming out of it and feeling much better gradually.
Very cool. Did you go into the Army as a canine handler, or was that something different that just kind of manifested itself throughout your career?
I would be the latter. So I went in as military police, and that was because I wanted to clean my act up as a punk teenager. And I figured that, you know, you kind of like want to be law enforcement, that would likely, you know, help me clean up. And so I ended up driving for the colonel at one point. And once you drive for the colonel, you can kind of write your own ticket. So my time with Colonel Chandler was done. And he's like, hey, man, what do you want to do? And I told him I wanted to be a dog handler. And that's how I was sent to military working dog school in Lackland Air Force Base in 2002. And so I've been training dogs since 2002. I'm kind of dating myself there.
Since 2002?
Yeah, I've been in the game a little while.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I joined the Air Force in November of 2001. Well, I enlisted on 9/12, but I didn't get my first day of basic training was in November of 2001. And then 2002, I got to my first duty station at RAF Lincoln Heath in England. So yeah, man, we've been there a while. We've been doing this thing quite a while, huh?
That's interesting. So I went in 2000, so we weren't too far off there. And then like yourself, my first a duty station was actually overseas in Germany. And so I share that probably a passion you may have of travel, which I just love.
You know what I find hilarious is now, I try to find humor in everything. And when you're sitting over at the MEP station and you're like super nervous and you go into basic training, you're like, oh my gosh, I really hope I get a great assignment. Or I went in with a guaranteed job. I went in as a F-15 mechanic, you know, crew chief. I went in as an aircraft maintainer, fighters. As we pick our assignments and stuff, I literally, big bold letters, wrote no overseas and crossed out every single box. There's like 8 boxes. And then on 6 out, I was like, Hawaii, which I didn't even realize was like overseas, but anyway, so like I was like Hawaii, Florida, Carolinas, Ohio, Michigan, which is where I'm from is Michigan, but we have a guard base there. I was like, yeah, you never know. I was like Michigan, Ohio, you know, Vegas, you know, like all the cool places that like everybody wants to go to. And literally my first duty station was overseas in England. I was like, I bet they did that on purpose.
Yeah.
Like I wrote no overseas and crossed out every single box. And I bet they did that crap on purpose. And it turned out to be the best two and a half years that I had spent. I mean, tons of fun, seen a ton of countries, deployed to Iraq, deployed all over the place. I mean, so many European countries we went TDY to, went to Singapore, I mean, just so many different places. And I had met some of the greatest people that I've ever come to know in that 2.5, almost 3 years time. So it was actually a blessing. But I think it was kind of funny that I put an overseas and they gave me an overseas assignment.
It is funny, man. It goes to show that there's always forces that are bigger and greater than us always working and crafting, helping craft our life that we're intended to live, I think.
Right. Absolutely. So the whole theme of the show is really about your transformation. We all go through a transformation. I don't think that life sells sunshine and rainbows. So tell us a time that you were confronted. You had a transformational moment that changed your life and put you on the path to what you're doing today.
Yeah, I'm happy to share. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to share some of what could have been the transformation. And as the audience is listening, they're going to be like, oh, well, that's it. That definitely woke him up. And you're going to learn, like, no, that wasn't it. And that's one of the issues of being a stubborn person. So we'll go back to 2011. And this is where I have a pet dog training company. And at this point, I made close to $1 million in 2.5 years training dogs, of all things. Mm-hmm. And had commercials on TV and really felt like I was doing some good things. Now, what was happening behind the scenes that I was not willing to acknowledge is the fact that I was a workaholic. And so I was working with 10 to 12 clients per day and just staying busy so I did not have to deal with obtrusive thoughts. Now, this is back when I was 30 years old. I'm 38 now. And for 5 months, I ended up having a stomach pain. Really excruciating. And then one morning I woke up and I threw up something clear, and I had never done that before. And as I stare into the toilet with this clear stuff, I'm like, this something is not right. I got to go do something about this. So I called my office manager and I said, hey, cancel all my appointments. I got to rush to the ER. And so I did. And the doctor was so kind with my naive self, where I was like, hey doc, just give me some pain meds, man. I got to get going. I got clients. I got to help. Well, he said, look, you know the VA, you're here now, you may not get seen for a month, just hang out, just chill out here. Well, within 24 hours, I was in an ambulance having emergency surgery to remove a mass, and it was stage 3 colon cancer.
Whoa.
At the age of 30 years old. Now, some people may say,
wow,
let me look at my life, right? And what am I doing wrong? Well, again, I was stubborn, and so I didn't do any of that. I wanted to go back to work. Well, after my first round of chemo, I went through chemotherapy for about 6 months, and 4 days after the first round, that was rough. Now, you know, I had never had chemo before. In fact, I had never even broke a bone in my body prior, so I was fairly fortunate, and so this was pretty devastating at 30. Well, after the first round of chemo, just a few days later, I began to feel really weak. I started to sweat profusely, and it was in the middle of the night, and of all days, on the 4th of July, a day that a lot of combat vets, you know, really struggle, because 4th of July can remind some of us as the obvious war, right?
So
I thought it was the chemo really kicking my butt. And I remember telling my girlfriend at the time, I was like, can you just call the ER nurse? Like, I'm not feeling well. I know it's 1 a.m., but just give a call and tell them the symptoms, because this doesn't feel right. I'm in pain. I'm sweating profusely. My limbs feel like jello. I can barely walk up and down the stairs. And it ended up being a widowmaker heart attack.
Wow.
So that was just two months after the colon cancer diagnosis. Now, again, a lot of people would wake up at this point, but I hadn't. And so, again, I needed my drug. And so only a month after the heart attack, I went back to work so that I could essentially silence the negative voice of all these obtrusive thoughts. Well, that was the worst mistake of my life. Because I never addressed any issues mentally, physically, emotionally. And I went back to work a month after the heart attack. And my dog, I had a Belgian Malinois, which I think you can appreciate. And you can certainly testify what that breed is like. You know, if you were to summarize, Sean, if you were to summarize the Belgian Malinois breed, how would you describe them in a couple of words from your experience?
Wow. So my dog is like no BS, like very serious, but it could be playful, but just no BS, man, all business, you know, and is very like, I don't even know what you would call it. Very hard nosed.
Yeah. They
stubborn are. Sometimes.
That's really interesting. You say that. Now in the dog industry, we call them like a German Shepherd. with 5 hour energy in their system and an alligator. That's a Malinois.
Yeah, it's like they're very rambunctious.
That's right.
But they're like, no BS. Like they, if they're gonna go outside, like they're like, let me out now. Like I have to go now. I have to go. And so there's like, go lay down. No, I'm not laying down. I'm going outside. Like they're very, you know, like I want this now.
That's a really great segue for what happens next. So I have to, the listeners can remember what you had just shared. That's what I'm dealing with in my own dog by the name of Montage, who's a Belgian Malinois rescue from the Humane Society that I got. Now,
so
Montage
is ours.
Oh, how cool is that? I love that, man.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, we got her from the Humane Society in San Antonio, Texas.
Oh, I love it. A lot of people get Malinois from rescues because people that get them, they can't handle them, so they turn them in.
Right.
Right? And so Montage had a small sore, should I say, on her front left paw, and she kept licking it. Now, I'm not really versed in medical stuff, but my simple thinking and logic was that a wet wound will not heal. So I put a muzzle on Montage so she wouldn't lick the wound. Well, when I put the muzzle on her, she acted like a Malinois. She also told me, hey, I'm not used to this. What the heck is this thing on me? Take it off. And she charged after me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when she charged after me, all of this trauma, all of this health stuff, everything came crashing down in this one moment, which resulted in me having an outburst where I tossed her numerous times. I struck her with a closed fist. Now, I wasn't intending to hurt her. I acted out of fear. And I acted out of, hey, you can't charge me. And nonetheless, she did not get injured, but my office manager turned me in for animal cruelty. And this was caught on my security cameras at my facility. Yeah. And I ended up hiring an attorney, and she watched the video, and the attorney's like, hey, look, the dog didn't get injured. You're going to be fine. Don't worry about this. We'll make a donation to the Humane Society. You'll be fine. Well, within 24 hours, in front of my facility was the news channels. And I was on the front page of the newspaper, and I was on the news, and I ended up getting charged with animal cruelty in 2011. And I then hid for the next 5 years, did nothing with my life.
Jeez.
And I went to jail. I lost my business. I was forced out of dogs for 2 years. And the worst part was that I lost Montage and my other Malinois. And that's what broke my heart the most, that I never got that closure. I never really got to say goodbye. And that was the most difficult part. Now, being in the jail cell was not my transformation. Being in a hospital bed was not my transformation. Being in solitude, my own house arrest, if you will, by choice, didn't wake me up. What woke up was 3 years ago when I thought I was having a second heart attack. And in this moment, 3 years ago, I wake up and feel very weak again, and I start to sweat profusely, and that's exactly what had happened the first time. And I end up calling 911, and I tell them I'm having another heart attack, and please send help right away. And I feel so weak that this darkness is coming over, and my body, my mind, my head, everything wants to lay down on the floor and just go to sleep. But not go to sleep. It's more like a passing out, because I had just woken up. And in this moment, I feel as though this is my last moment on earth at 35 years old, and I had a bunch of regrets. That I did not do every single thing that I wanted to do in my lifetime, that I had taken life for granted, and that I did not become the kind of human being that I wanted to, that I allowed my traumas to define me and essentially impact how I show up in the world. And as my head's about to hit the ground, and I feel really weak, and I feel like this is truly my last moment here on this earth at 35 years old, this thing comes over me, and it's like this insight, this wisdom, that tells me, like, get your life back. And so I reach out to this higher power, and I beg for my life back. And I make a promise that if I'm giving another chance to live, that I promise I will lean in and do the work to improve myself as a human being, that I will truly transform myself. And then I promise that I would share how I did it with other people. And next thing you know, after the ambulance comes, I start to feel better. And I don't know, nor do doctors know what happened that day. And I don't even care what happened. I just know that that was my crucible and defining moment that chose that I decided to wake up and be a better human being. And that was my transformational moment.
Damn. That's, bro. That's crazy, man. Like, you go through all this stuff. Like you think, like you said, most people are like, oh my gosh, colon cancer. There's a good percentage I'm gonna survive, but then there's that other like 9 to 18% that don't. I'm like, holy crap, this is major chemo. I'm like going through this sickness, like this is huge, man. I gotta wake up. But it took a lot of other stuff to really kind of shake you. I always wonder, and I hate doing that to myself. I always wonder, like, well, what if I would have done this way or whatever. Like, I was always fascinated as a kid with the choose your own adventure books.
Yeah, because here.
Cause you could like read the book and go, you crawled into the cave and then you got sucked into the precipice and you died. You're like, well, let me go back to my decision. I want to go this way. You know what I mean? Like, you'd always like, nope, I'm not doing that one. Let me go to the other one. Or you would read like both things and be like, she's behind door number one. Like, that one just sounds more. So you read both decisions, like, to take this route, turn to page 155. To take this other route, turn to page 67. You know? And so it's so nuts. And I just wish that I would have maybe not married the person I married, or maybe I wouldn't have gone to the duty stations that I've gone to, or if I wouldn't have done the stupid stuff to ruin the marriage when I did get married, or like, it's just so many different things. If I wouldn't have never joined the military, like, what, there's always these things like what ifs, and I hate doing that. But man, I mean, I think it takes losing the dogs, takes the cancer, takes the sickness, it takes everything that's ever happened to you to make you the person that you are today. And that's what sucks, but it's also amazing. Is this stuff must happen to you as bad as it was to complete that transformation?
I agree. I feel as though that we have a choice. We can complain about the suck or we can embrace the suck. And what, yep, I feel is like there are actually lessons in all these uncomfortable moments that are happening to us in life, whether it's the life-threatening thing or a hardcore argument with our significant other. I feel as though there are lessons being given to us and we just got to wake up to be able to receive it and tune into what it is so that we can know what that lesson is and not repeat it from moving forward.
True. Yep. Absolutely. So how have you taken your transformational moment, everything that you've ever been through, and are now elevating the world around you? You've got TEDx Talks, which is amazing. A lot of speakers want to be on TEDx. I personally believe that TED and TEDx are the Super Bowl of speaking. It's like once you've been on that stage, you're good enough. You've made it. That's the validation. And a lot of people, I've not met too many speakers that are like, well, I mean, TEDx is like, whatever. Like I've never heard anybody say that. TEDx is like a big deal. Like it's a big deal to people. Some people are like, yeah, I mean, it's the best, but I don't know. Like I'll get there when I get there, you know, but so many careers have been launched on TEDx. You look at Tony Robbins has one, Jeff Hoffman, who's the founder of Priceline.com, Simon Sinek, you know, Seth Godin's got some, I mean, there's some amazing famous people who started their speaking career, speaking on TEDx stage 10, 15, you know, however many years ago. And you have two, which is in itself a big deal. That's a big deal.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, what's interesting is what I'm creating now, it all feeds into learning from my past and being of service. And so like when I was doing real high-end dog training, working with a lot of clients, I ended up getting burned out. And I feel as though that's partially part of why I had all these life-threatening things happen. And so I was like, look, I have this gift. I have this magic that I can share with people to transform their lives with their dogs and improve the quality of life of the owner and the dog. But I cannot continue to do this one-on-one. So right now, my team and I are building online dog training. Like, we currently have about 100 uploaded into the platform, and there's going to be about 200 total. And so this allows me to scale myself, number one. Number two is there's nearly 2 million dogs euthanized every year in America alone. Mm-hmm. My thinking is this. I want to make a dent in that number by way of this. One, if every single person that adopts a dog has support for dog training, returning a dog because it's naughty, like those Malinois that get returned, is no longer an option, because people can have an economical, affordable way to receive dog training through this online course. So now a naughty dog is no longer a valid reason to return a dog to the shelter.
Okay, I like it.
Is through the CBD brand, which, by the way, I'm pretty square nowadays. So, like, I don't drink, I don't do drugs, but I do have this natural hemp-based product which has non-intoxicating, meaning no THC type of product, which can really help with a lot of medical benefits and behavioral benefits. And so my vision is, if we can get this product or a product like it, doesn't even have to be mine, into the shelter environment, we have dogs calmer, thus more adoptable for the people that are considering the dog to be adopted. And so that's part of the work that I'm doing as it relates to with dogs, is essentially just giving back, because they've done so much for me.
Very cool. I like it, man. I like how you could take the training of training an animal, training a dog, and then turn that around and learn something from that.
Exactly.
Like, I think that's amazing.
So that's the second TEDx talk. So the first TEDx talk is essentially my come out story, Sean, where I never did share with the media my side of what really did happen when I had that animal cruelty case. I never did share it with the media, not once. And I used the TEDx stage March 30th of 2019 on overcoming PTSD using dog training techniques. I shared what really did happen. And I share this formula called RCTR and how it works for training nearly any dog and how it can actually apply to overcoming trauma for people. And that is actually endorsed by psychologists.
Love it.
That's really exciting. Now, the second talk is lighter, and it's about embracing the lessons we can learn from pets. And that talk is titled, Let's Treat People More Like Dogs. Mm-hmm. And so I'll give you one of them. And that is, if we look at either ourselves coming into the door when we're with our and greeting our significant other, or the other way around, if we look at how us or our significant other greets our dog when someone walks in the door, it's usually meted with the enthusiasm that the dog gives us. Now, how do we greet that significant other, or how does that significant other greet us? Is it with the same enthusiasm as the dog, or is it a little bit different? I'm thinking it's probably a little bit different. And so what I'm saying is this: if we can treat each other more like we treat our pets, what would the world be like, and what would our relationships be like?
Right. I feel like it's like undying loyalty.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, like, it doesn't. So a dog will remember to a point.
Yeah.
Man, you want to talk about a smart dog. I mean, they are the number one smartest animal. German Shepherd's number two. Dalmatian's number three. Poodles is like four. No, maybe poodles number three, something like that. But anyway, poodles, Dalmatians, you know, Cocker Spaniels, you know, the whatever. So I got up from the couch just a couple days ago. She likes to lay under our feet, and you would think that this dog would know better. But we're on the couch. She's laying underneath our feet. You would think, as many times as this dog has been stepped on, that maybe I should. Nope. She still does it. Maybe I get stepped on so many times that I should probably move. So I go to get up and step on her foot, and she yelps and then jumps and clamps onto my elbow. Didn't sink her teeth in, clamped onto my elbow because I started walking away. she pulled me back, let go, and sat down and stared at me. And I was like, I'm sorry.
That's right.
I'm so sorry. You know? Oh, and she like stared at me and then laid back down. She was like,
right.
I mean, literally, if I spoke dog, I would hear something like, hey, mofo, like, I'm laying here, you know, and it was all so fast. I stepped up. She's like, grab my elbow, right, and then pulled me back, let go. And then I looked at her and she looked at me and I was like, I'm sorry. Like, don't lay there. I'm sorry. And she like stared at me and then she like laid back down and then watched me walk. And then when I came back to the couch, she sat up. I sat down and then she laid back down.
That's
and I was like, someone's getting a little smarter, But then, like, the next day is back to the same. It's like, but you know what? Undying loyalty. She still comes to me. She still, you know, gives me kisses. She's still playful. Like, I mean, everything. And it's just, I don't know, man. She's a member of our family. She lays in bed with us because
oh, yeah.
I have to, you know, like,
yeah,
yeah, man.
Now there's something really interesting going on. So like, I don't just train dogs. I do dog psychology. Like I can talk to dogs without saying a word. And I teach people how to talk to dogs without saying a word. And it happens through body language because just like people, dogs communicate 90%, you know, mid 90 percentile non-verbally. And so what's going on with your dog? Why your Malinois will lay as it does, it's so that your dog knows when you get up. It wants to know when you leave. It has to do
yeah.
with your dog's lack of independence and mild, potentially, separation anxiety. It wants to know where daddy's going. It feels safe. And so your dog is doing that strategically. Now, the stepping
I deploy a lot. I mean, over the years, I've deployed so many times. You know, and then we'll FaceTime. I don't know, FaceTime. It's like we'll Zoom each other or whatever, Skype, whatever. We FaceTime each other, you know, and I'm like, let me see the dog. Like, go get the dog. And then she shows my video. I'm like, hey, like I'm like on the video. And the dog's just like searching for me. Like, I hear him. Where is he? You know, so, yeah, it's just so funny.
Yeah,
but maybe
some really
deployments.
Super intelligent, yeah.
Could be. Like you said, separation anxiety could be from the deployments, you know, or like speaking engagements, like I'm going tomorrow to Georgia. And then 2 days after that, on the 8th and 9th, I'll be in LA and then coming back, you know, so I'm going to be gone straight 3 days, possibly four. So yeah, she's probably going to, it's probably going to do the same thing, you know? So
yeah.
I
give you a little training tip on that one? I think it would be helpful
yeah.
for your audience. Okay, so
sure.
Here's the deal. What we tend to do, and this is normal, we're acting out of our hearts, and it's, for me, hard not to do this, but I believe in setting the animal up for success. And so what we tend to do is to tell our animals goodbye and tell our animals hello because it feels good and they're happy. Now, the problem with that is we are imprinting that when we leave, it's a big deal, and that when we come home, it's a big deal. Which then puts the animal in a little bit of a state of stress, or it's for some chaos or anxiety. And so what is ideal is that we ignore the dog when we leave and we ignore the dog when we come home. Now, does that mean we just don't love on them? No. We wait until the dog chooses on their own to be calm. Once we get that, we do anything we want. We lay on the floor, roll around, kiss, hug, play, whatever. But we wait until the dog chooses on their own to be calm.
Okay, say that one more time.
So
we
ignore the dog when we leave and we ignore the dog when we come home. When
oh, I don't.
We are, you know, that's what we need to do so that the
oh,
dog.
Oh, we need to do that. Okay, I was like, wait, what? I don't, what? Like, I'm
like,
loving on the dog. And I'm like, I have to leave. I'm so sorry. I have to leave. Like, I don't know.
And you still do that. But here's the secret. The secret is we say our goodbye an hour or two before we go. Right? So because for dogs, there are pictures. And the dog is not then associating you grabbing your keys or putting on your shoes or a particular bag or a suit as leaving. right? You desensitize the triggers, right, that stimulate the dog on what's about to happen. So again, we ignore the dog. We need to ignore the dog when we come home, so we don't make it a big deal that we were gone. And we need to ignore when we leave, so it's not a big deal when we come home or when we leave. Okay, so it's just neutral type of thing. All right.
Now, that would be so hard for me.
It is hard, but I still say hello to my dog and I still say my goodbyes. I just do it well before I take off. That's all. Right. Or well after I've been home. That's all. So you still get to do it. So now here's why that matters so much is the animal's mental health. Think about the animal being in this current continuous state of anxiety because we accidentally conditioned that it's a big deal when we're gone. That's why. Because I care about the well-being of the animal's mental state.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know what's crazy is when I come home, she is right there waiting for me. Like me and my wife will go to the store and then we'll come back and it's so crazy because I don't know how this happens. Maybe because they hear the car pull up or the door, door close. I mean, I don't know, but yeah, I was just thinking about that. I'm like, every time I come home, she is walking up to the door. She's like sitting there waiting. And I'm like, hey, baby, so, and every fur mom right now is like, no, Ryan, I'm going to love my dog when I come home.
That's right. So I know. Look, my dog just lays in bed with me and we do all that stuff. It's just, we do it at the appropriate time, so that we don't create unnecessary anxiety in the animal's mind. So I'm actually doing it out of kindness to the animal, out of coming from a healthy, that's all. And so what I'm doing is I'm thinking of the animal before I'm thinking of myself.
Right. Yeah, totally. So as we close the show, give us one takeaway. What's one takeaway of the show? If nobody listens to anything else of the show, give us 30 seconds or less. What is the main takeaway from this episode?
Like my realization from it?
No, like a listener who's listening, they're like, Ryan, what's the point? Like, what are you guys talking about? Like, what's the one takeaway that you want to leave the audience with?
Yes. It's quite simple. It's on the second TEDx talk. It's a matter of we all have a choice in life about choosing to change or choosing not to change. What's so cool about life is when the desire is strong enough and we decide for the change, we could ultimately say, hey, I'm going to be a professional bodybuilder tomorrow and start it or start it now. So I just want to encourage people to make decision on what it is they want and then follow it up with action. And so it really starts with a state of mind on deciding what you want and then going after it. And I feel as though anything is possible as long as we have a limitless mindset.
Got it. I love it. Absolutely love it. Thank you so much for coming on the show, talking to us about your TEDx talks, talking to us about your transformational moment and what needed to happen for you to course correct, to elevate the world around you. So, where can they go? I mean, I've got the Facebook, LinkedIn, worldofdogtraining.com. I'm RyanMatthews.com. Where do you want the listeners to go?
Yeah, hit me up on Facebook. It's at I am Ryan Matthews, 2 T's and an S at the end. And I'll see you in LA. I'll be cheering you on while you speak in LA. I'll be going to that event. So I'm looking forward to seeing you.
Heck yeah, man. That's right. You are going to be there. So I speak in Georgia tomorrow, leave there, immediately fly out to LA, and then I speak solo on the 9th in the morning, and then I'm on the podcast panel in the afternoon. So yeah, I have my keynote in the morning, and then I have my podcast panel in the afternoon. So I'm super pumped. So I'll see you in LA, brother.
Sounds good, man. Thanks for the opportunity, Sean. See you in a few days.
You are welcome, and happy Veterans Day to you, my friend.
Thank you so much.
Life Transformation Radio listeners, an amazing guest impacting the world around him. If anything resonated with the show today, please connect with him on Facebook. There's LinkedIn. The show note has all of the websites there. Connect with Ryan. Let him know that you heard him here on Life Transformation Radio. And with that, I close the show by saying live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out the core values that you hold deep in your heart. And I call this living your brand. So until next episode, live a great life.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.